find as we take up positions around it. That is a good sign. It does not rage us away at once, which is a better one. We spell out the terms in placatory fluxes of reverberation. The earth keeps its life magic, and the rest of us get to keep ours without interference.
We have given it back the moon, and thrown the obelisks in as a surety of good faith.
But in exchange, the seasons must cease. There is a period of stillness. I know only later that this is several days. In the moment, it feels like another millennium. Then, a heavy lurching jolt of gravitation. Accepted, and the best sign of all, it sets loose the numberless presences that it has ingested over the past epoch. They spin away, vanishing into the currents of magic. And I don't know what happens to them beyond that. I won't ever know what happens to souls after death. Or at least, I won't know for another 7 billion years or so, whenever the Earth finally dies. An intimidating thing to contemplate. It's been a challenging first 40,000 years. On the other hand, nowhere to go but up. I go back to them, your daughter and your old enemy and your friends, to tell them the news. Somewhat to my surprise, several months have passed in the interim. They've settled into the building that Nossun occupied, living off Alabaster's old garden, and the supplies that we brought for him and Nossun. That won't be enough long-term, of course, though they've supplemented it admirably with improvised fishing lines and bird-catching traps and dried edible seaweed, which Tonki seems to have figured out a means of cultivating down at the water's edge. So resourceful, these modern people. But it is becoming increasingly clear that they'll have to go back to the stillness soon if they want to keep living. I find Nossun, who is sitting alone at the pylon again. Your body remains where it fell, but someone has tucked fresh wildflowers into its one remaining hand. There's another hand beside it, I notice, positioned like an offering near the stump of your arm. It's too small for you, but she meant well. She doesn't speak for a long while after I appear, and I find that this pleases me. Her kind talk so much. It goes on for long enough, though. Even I get a little impatient. I tell her, "You won't see steel again." In case she was worried about that. She jerks a little as if she's forgotten my presence. Then she sighs. "Tell him I'm sorry. I just couldn't." He understands. She nods, then,
"Shafa died today."
I had forgotten him. I should not have. He was part of you. Still, I say nothing. She seems to prefer that. She takes a deep breath.
"Will you... the others say you brought them and Mama. Can you take us back? I know it'll be dangerous."
"There's no longer any danger." When she frowns, I explain all of it to her. The truce, the release of hostages, the cessation of immediate hostilities in the form of no more seasons. It does not mean complete stability. Plate tectonics will be plate tectonics. Season-like disasters will still occur, though with greatly decreased frequency. I conclude, you can take the vehicle back to the stillness. She shudders. I belatedly recall what she suffered there. She also says,
"I don't know if I can give it magic. I feel like..."
She lifts the stone-capped stump of her left wrist. I understand, then. And yes, she is right. She is aligned perfectly, and will be so for the rest of her life. Arajani is lost to her forever. Unless she wants to join you. I say, I will power the vehicle. The charge should last 6 months or so. Leave within that time. I adjust my position then to the foot of the stairs. She starts and looks around to find me holding you. I've picked up her old hand too, because our children are always part of us. She stands, and for a moment I fear unpleasantness. But the look on her face is not unhappy, just resigned. I wait for a moment, or a year, to see if she has any final words for your corpse. She says instead, I don't know what will happen to us.
Us? She sighs.
Origins.
Oh. The current season will last for some time, even with the rifting quelled, I say. Surviving it will require cooperation among many kinds of people. Cooperation presents opportunities. She frowns.
Opportunities? For what? You said the seasons would end after this.
Yes.
She holds up her hands, or one hand and one stump, to gesture in frustration.
People killed us and hated us when they needed us. Now we don't even have that.
Us. We.
She still thinks of herself as Origin, though she will never again be able to do more than listen to the Earth. I decide not to point this out. I do say, however, and you won't need them, either.
She falls silent, perhaps in confusion.
To clarify, I add, with the end of the seasons and the death of all the guardians, it will now be possible for Origins to conquer or eliminate Stills, if they so choose. Previously, neither group could have survived without the other's aid.
Nasun gasps. That's horrible.
I don't bother to explain that just because something is horrible does not make it any less true.
There won't be any more fulcrums, she says.
She looks away, troubled, perhaps remembering her destruction of the Antarctic fulcrum.
I think they're wrong, but I don't know how else.
She shakes her head. I watch her flounder in silence for a month or a moment. I say, the fulcrums are wrong.
What?
Imprisonment of Origins was never the only option for ensuring the safety of society. I pause deliberately, and she blinks, perhaps remembering that Origin parents are perfectly capable of raising Origin children without disaster. Lynching was never the only option. The nodes were never the only option. All of these were choices. Different choices have always been possible. There is such sorrow in her, your little girl. I hope Nasun learns someday that she is not alone in the world. I hope she learns how to hope again. She lowers her gaze. They're not going to choose anything different.
They will if you make them.
She's wiser than you, and does not balk at the notion of forcing people to be decent to each other. Only the methodology is a problem.
I don't have any orogeny anymore.
Orogeny, I say sharply, so she will pay attention, was never the only way to change the world. She stares. I feel that I've said all I can, so I leave her there to contemplate my words. I visit the city's station and charge its vehicle with sufficient magic to return to the stillness. It will still take a journey of months or more for Nasun and her companions to reach Renonis from the Antarctics. The season will likely get worse while they travel, because we have a moon again. Still,
They are part of you.
I hope they survive. Once they're on their way, I come here, to the heart of the mountain beneath Core Point, to attend to you. There is no one true way when we initiate this process. The Earth, for the sake of good relations, I will no longer call it evil, reordered us instantly, and by now, many of us are skilled enough to replicate that reordering without a lengthy gestation. I have found that speed produces mixed results, however. Alabaster, as you would call him, may not fully remember himself for centuries or ever. You, however, must be different. I have brought you here, reassembled the raw arcanic substance of your being, and reactivated the lattice that should have preserved the critical essence of who you were. You lose some memory. There is always loss with change. But I have told you this story, primed what remains of you, to retain as much as possible of who you were. Not to force you into a particular shape, mind you. From here on, you may become whomever you wish. It's just that you need to know where you've come from, to know where you're going. Do you understand? And if you should decide to leave me, I will endure. I've been through worse. So I wait. Time passes. A year, a decade, a week. The length of time does not matter, though Gehua eventually loses interest and leaves to attend her own affairs. I wait. I hope. No. I simply wait. And then one day, deep in the fissure where I have put you, the geode spits and hisses open. You rise from its spent halves, the matter of you slowing and cooling to its natural state. Beautiful, I think. Locks of roped jasper, skin of striated ochre marble that suggests laugh lines at eyes and mouth, and stratified layers to your clothing. You watch me, and I watch you back. You say, in an echo of the voice you once had, "What is it that you want?" "Only to be with you," I say. "Why?" I adjust myself to a posture of humility, with head bowed and one hand over my chest. "Because that is how one survives eternity," I say. "Or even a few years. Friends. Family. Moving with them. Moving forward." "Do you remember when I first told you this? Back when you despaired of ever repairing the harm you'd done?" "Perhaps." Your position adjusts, too. Arms folded, expression skeptical. Familiar. I try not to hope, and fail utterly. "Friends, family," you say. "Which am I to you?" "Both, and more. We are beyond such things." I am not anxious. "What do you want?" You consider. I listen to the slow ongoing roar of the volcano down here in the deep. Then you say, "I want the world to be better." I have never regretted more my inability to leap into the air and whoop for joy. Instead, I transit to you with one hand proffered. "Then let's go make it better." You look amused. "It's you. It's truly you." "Just like that?" "It might take some time." "I don't think I'm very patient." But you take my hand. "Don't be patient. Don't ever be. this is the way a new world begins. Neither am I say. So let's get to it.
This has been a Hachette audio production of The Stone Sky, The Broken Earth, Book 3, written by N.K. Jemisin, read by Robin Miles, produced and directed by Tommy Harron, post-production by Gabino Reyes. The Stone Sky is also available in print and digital formats from Orbit, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2017 by N.K. Jemisin. Audio production copyright 2017 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons living or dead, events, or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.